more participants in the Thrift Savings Plan are paying off loans than any time in the past decade, and more TSP account holders took hardship withdrawals last year than in the last 10 years. Kim Weaver's Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. She says two events that affected federal employees in 2013 had the TSP on alert.
We had two big blips in the year, if you'll remember. During middle of the summer, we had the sequestration, and employees were not getting paid their normal paychecks, and then again with the government shutdown. And in those two periods, we saw big blips in hardship withdrawals and loans. And so what we didn't know, obviously, until the end of the year was whether that would put us to a year total, a new total, which it did, or whether it would have trickled back down enough in November and December to sort of hit regular levels. We are hoping, and as I'm sure our participants are hoping as well, that now that the budget deal has been signed and there's some more regularity about agency budgets, that we won't see that again this coming year.
Jack Moore writes, the board processed a total of 291,000 loans and about 138,000 hardship withdrawals last year, according to statistics presented at the monthly meeting yesterday. Tell me the difference between a loan and a hardship withdrawal and what the implications are for a TSP participant, Kim.
A loan is exactly what it sounds like. It is a loan that you are paying back to yourself. It's still something you should think about, but nonetheless, you're taking your money out of your retirement account, using it for some other purpose, and you're repaying yourself at the G fund rate. So your retirement account, while probably lower than it would have been when you're done repaying the loan, it's not permanently diminished. A hardship withdrawal is just that. You are taking your money out of the TSP. You can't put it back in, so your retirement account is permanently diminished. And the IRS regs require that you cannot contribute to the TSP for 6 months after that hardship withdrawal. So a hardship withdrawal is something that someone should really do only after they've sort of explored all other options, because it's available to them, but it has some real meaningful consequences for their retirement.
And neither one of us is a tax expert, but there are some pretty severe tax implications for taking the hardship withdrawal, too.
There is. You pay regular income tax on it and then a 10% penalty.
The participation rate, a little soft, according to this story and the items that you talked about at yesterday's board. Any sense of where that's coming from or what that means?
Well, the hardship withdrawals that we just talked about roll over into participation rates. Because we saw a bump in our hardship withdrawals, those individuals can't participate under the IRS regs, so they're excluded. And then we typically, in the last month of the year, see a downturn in participation rates because people don't calculate their contribution to the TSP quite right, and so they hit the limit, which last year was $17,500, a little early. And so maybe their last paycheck or two in December, they couldn't contribute to the TSP. Those people almost always come back and begin to participate again in January. So those contributors, those participants are not people we're overly concerned about, but obviously we want everyone to be getting the maximum that they can out of their TSP.
The bump overall there, not really great, 86.1% in November, 85.9% in December. But what I take away from that means there's still 14% of employees that work for the federal government that aren't participating in the TSP at all, Kim.
Yes, that is exactly right. Well, there's FERS employees. Those are the ones we're most concerned about, because for CSRS and uniform services, obviously, the TSP is not an integral part of their retirement. For FERS employees, it is. And if they're not participating, they are leaving money on the table, and A, from the employer match, and B, they are putting themselves at risk for their retirement. So we always try to reach out to those participants or potential participants and get them to look very closely at the TSP.
Kim Weaver, the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, is my guest. The Roth TSP making progress. This is kind of continued month after month after month after month at a pretty stable and healthy clip, it looks like.
Yeah, In last year, the number of people with Roth accounts grew by 191%. And so you can't beat that. We are very pleased. You know, getting the Roth TSP option up and available was an enormous amount of work. And it was work by us. It was work by the agency payroll offices. And we expected that it would be a popular option, but it would take time to catch on. And we're quite gratified that people are using that as one of their tax planning options.
Jack picked up on something interesting at this monthly meeting yesterday regarding the Roth TSP, Kim. Active duty service members couldn't make Roth contributions till October 2012. That's 7 months after the new option was launched. And I remember we talked about that, and that was an issue, I believe, that DFAS had to incorporate that into their system or something like that.
Exactly. DFAS had to program for it.
Right. So it was an issue on their end and not on your end. But Jack also writes the Roth options turned out to be a very popular option with the uniformed services, makes up more than 45% of all Roth TSP participants. Do we have a sense of why that is?
Because for the younger service members, depending on your income bracket, the lower your income bracket, the more likely it is that a Roth account is more appealing to you. Because if you're getting for pre-tax, the TSP, excuse me, I'm not being coherent. The TSP is a pre-tax benefit, which obviously helps on your taxes. But if your income is at a certain point where getting that benefit isn't particularly useful, converting that money and putting it into a Roth TSP account where you pay taxes on it now but then never have to pay taxes on it again, assuming it's in for 5 years and you don't withdraw before 59 and a half, you have done yourself a great service. And we anticipated that the uniformed services would be the ones most interested in the Roth TSP. And again, we're just really pleased that that's the way it's turning out.
Don't worry about coherence. I'm incoherent on the radio for 3 hours a day and nobody seems to mind. So okay. It's not a problem, apparently. You told Jack after this meeting that you are concerned about the Postal Service reform bill that is bouncing around in the Senate. The Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee is the source committee for this. But you told him that they've mitigated some big concerns that you had, but you told Jack we still aren't wild about the idea of the TSP being balkanized. Explain to me what that means and how that legislation would do that in the view of the TSP.
What the Postal Reform Bill did, the original version, was said that the Postal Service could bargain with its four unions over the defined benefit portion of FERS and the TSP, and they could reach some different outcome than the rest of us currently experience. We were very concerned because trying to educate people about the TSP, as we were just discussing, trying to get the Roth TSP information and the hardship withdrawal information and the employer match information out so people can really understand it and make informed decisions is no easy task. Everyone is bombarded with a whole lot of information. And we were very concerned that if all of a sudden there were now four different postal employer matches for different union employees, it would make it that much harder. Our calculators, for example, are based on a 5% employer match because that's what everyone has in FERS. But if you're getting a different employer match, either our calculators are useless or we have to all of a sudden proliferate calculators and expect people to be able to pick the right one. So we were very, very concerned about that. We are also concerned that the language was broad enough that people could try and bargain over, you know, how death benefits are paid or withdrawal options or things that are very central to the plan. And we voiced those concerns quite strongly to the committee, and they addressed both of those. It is now clear that the bargaining can only be over contribution amounts, and it can only be one agreement. So the Postal Service and all four of its unions have to, if they choose, come to one agreement on a new contribution to the TSP. Nonetheless, our previous concerns still hold. You know, the more you splinter the TSP and the more there are different employer contributions to that, we're worried that that sort of proliferates and there are other agencies out there with other reasons to want to do the same thing. And the TSP which has had a very good reputation as a low-cost, simple plan, becomes not so simple, which drives up costs.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go, because if you're doing different plans for different agencies or different people inside different agencies, then that kind of defeats the purpose of the TSP the way it's structured now, it seems to me.
Exactly. And we don't, at the moment, we do not track costs to the level that would allow us, for example, to charge back just to the Postal Service or the specific employees. Our cost data isn't captured that way. And so, you know, that was a suggestion that someone made. We'll just charge extra for that benefit. Well, first of all, we don't think that that's really the right way to go. But more importantly, we couldn't do it even if we wanted to.
Kim Weaver's Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. You can read more about their monthly meeting and hear my conversation with Kim at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.